Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Welcome back to a brand new episode of Popcorn Podcast with Lee and Tim, where we're sitting down with Australian filmmakers Colin and Cameron Cairns. They are writer, director, and editor of new horror film, Late Night with the Devil. I'm Tim Ifland, movie buff.
And I'm Lee Livingstone, entertainment journalist.
And we love to talk all things movies.
We do. And in Late Night with the Devil, Johnny Carson rival Jack Del Roy is the host of Night Owls, a once popular talk show. A year on from the death of Jack's wife, ratings have plummeted and sponsors are getting nervous. Desperate to turn his fortunes around, Jack pulls out all the stops for his annual Halloween special, booking a psychic, a professional skeptic, a parapsychologist, and a young girl allegedly possessed by the devil. What could possibly go wrong?
Don't know what you're worried about, Lee. Absolutely nothing. It's such a normal group of people coming together for a casual conversation.
Yeah.
All right. Late Night with the Devil is written and directed by Colin and Cameron Cairns.
It stars David Dasmalchian, Laura Gordon, Ian Bliss, Faisal Bazzi, Ingrid Torelli, Rhys Oteri, and Georgina Haig.
Like all resourceful independent filmmakers worth their salt, siblings Colin and Cameron Cairns have worked tirelessly without funding in the early stages to create a quality horror out of almost nothing.
Yeah, in fact, horror master himself, get this, Stephen King, praised the writing and directing duo for what has become a record-breaking film for American distributors IFC Films, because Late Night with the Devil reportedly took in an appropriately devilish $666,666 on its Easter Sunday in its opening weekend. But that's not the record-breaking. I think it was made for something like less than $2 million, and it took in almost $3 million in its opening weekend, which is the highest grossing film for IFC Films.
That's incredible. Yeah. Oh, gosh, that number. And even on Easter Sunday too, just like the perfect storm of devilish, religious, weirdo things going on there. So the brothers made waves with their first feature in 2012, horror comedy 100 Bloody Acres, starring Damon Herriman. Now they're cementing Australia's reputation as leaders in horror with their take on demonic possession here.
Yeah, so they meld found footage and mock documentary style structures, and Late Night with the Devil feels fresh and unique in a done to death, pardon the pun, arena.
I'll let that one slip. But that hasn't stopped people trying to tear it down online for the brief use of AI, which it's important to note was made before the groundbreaking strike action and conversations about AI last year in 2023.
So Colin and Cameron join us on Popcorn Podcast to talk more about the controversy surrounding their film and the impact that it's had on them, and about convincing their crew to not do their best work, which is quite fun, and why they can now die happy.
Let's take a listen, friends.
Now, here's Mr. Midnight, Jack Delroy.
How are you guys?
Good.
Great.
Well, the response to Late Night with the Devil has been absolutely incredible, positive, and we love seeing Aussie-made films do so well on the international scene. How did it feel to launch it at South by Southwest?
That's a very distant memory now. I mean, it felt great. That was 12 months ago now. You know,
yeah.
So it feels like a lifetime ago. So much has happened since, but it was amazing. I mean, to have our world premiere at such a fantastic, fun, prestigious event was, you know, a dream come true. And then to see it play, you know, because you work on this thing for a couple of years.
Yeah.
You think you've made something decent. And then you go into the screening with 300 other people who have all got high hopes. And, you know, that's nerve-wracking. But at the end of it, they're applauding and cheering. And
yeah,
it's amazing. It's special. And look, every screening we've had since that we've attended, you know, has been much the same. A couple of months ago in LA. That's what makes it worthwhile. It's just sitting there in a big dark room with a group of people who are all sharing this.
Yes.
That's the fun stuff.
Yeah, that's why we love cinema. And Stephen King endorsed the film too. That's going to be exciting.
Yeah, we paid him off. it's the dollar deal, right? Yeah, amazing, huh? It was a dream come true. For two lovers of his work, a friend of ours, he put it really well. He said, like, Stephen King invented our childhood, and I think that's so true. So to get that plaudit from the man, you know, we can die happy filmmakers.
That's it. You're done. Out.
I'm taking the lethal dose now.
As a child of the 80s, I remember Don Lane as well and his Americanness and how what a novelty that was on the Australian screens. But why did you choose to make the film or the show Night Owls entirely American?
Okay, look, we did toy with the idea of setting it here for a while, but we just thought it would somehow make it less plausible, if anything, in that if the devil is trying to reach a mass market, you know, does it want 2.5 million viewers in Australia or does it want 100 million in the US? So it made sense that that's where it would, you know, start its campaign. Yeah, so that was probably the main reason. And then we also thought, look, just in terms of its commercial viability, because we've made stuff before that's very Aussie and it's harder to break through with the, it's not impossible, but it is harder to break through if it feels distinctly Australian. So a film like Talk to Me has totally disproven that, of course, which is fantastic news.
Yeah, it's really fun to see all those Aussie horrors doing really well on the big stage.
Yeah, yeah. And we just thought the idea of an Australian late night talk show just might not ring so true. It might just seem a little bit too exotic to an American audience, like a bit uncanny. It's familiar.
To a global, I think everyone's reference is Letterman, Carson, and those Americans.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah. Your dedication to filming the same way that they would have filmed in the 70s was really exciting and using those pedestal cameras and all of that. It created a real authenticity that I think shone through on the screen really well. But did it also throw up any challenges?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, other than working in TV ourselves, I mean, using this methodology of shooting a live TV show for a feature film, I mean, I think we had a pretty good idea going in. It was going to work for us just because three cameras rolling all at once and the actors being able to sort of just run the scene without us calling cut and having to reset cameras, you know, it just freed everyone up.
You know, maybe the challenge was just in getting, and it didn't take long, but making sure all the crew and like camera operators were on side with being a little bit amateurish in the way, you know, like keeping things crude. Like we're making a movie, but for the movie to work, it has to look like a kind of slightly crude TV show from the 70s, which means you frame up with more headroom and, you know, it's not, just doesn't have that sumptuous cinematic feel to it. So, you know, the temptation of good camera departments, and ours was certainly that, is to frame everything up beautifully and have it perfectly in focus. And but here it was like out of focus works, you know, poorly framed, trying to chase the action works.
Yeah.
You know, so that, because that's what makes it feel live. So we were quite, you know, we tell the actors, you know, we're not worrying about hitting marks on this show. It's like, if you feel like standing and doing something different on this take, go for it. And if it catches the operator off guard, great, because that's how it worked back in the day and still works on live TV.
And it's also a show that was on its last legs, I guess. Night Owls was just on its way out.
Yeah.
That's maybe very hard and harsh. I mean, come on.
Maybe the B team. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking of authenticity, I hope you'll indulge me for just a minute. I know you're probably sick of talking about this, but you've addressed the brief use of AI in the film. But how does it feel when you and your crew have worked so hard to create something from nothing and then people are throwing out one-star reviews because of three images that were slightly tweaked by AI? Because you did have designers working on them, didn't you?
Yes, we did. So the images, like the fundamental image there, like the skeleton or whatever it is, was done on AI. Now, the thing is with AI, you don't just say, oh, robot, please give me a cool 70s picture. It actually is a pretty painful process.
Yeah.
And I don't know if we do it again for that reason alone. Like, it's just to get an image that's half usable.
Yeah.
It's kind of a pain. So, but then, yeah, when you've got the image, then it's a matter of making it fit in with extra graphics and tweaking some stuff. So, I mean, the graphics team, who also happen to be our producers, that's how tight the budget was. You know, it was a thing we agreed we'd try. We'd experiment and have a play with it. It just felt like we were, you know, being resourceful indie filmmakers. And this is going back nearly 18 months when we
saw the
film. So the fact that people have latched on to that and then embellished it by saying things like, oh, it's wall-to-wall AI, the film's rush, it's, there's AI all over this, on one comment on a leading film platform. That is a little bit upsetting because, yeah, we've got a small but very passionate, dedicated team who just work their asses off to make this thing work. I dare anyone to watch the film and tell us to our faces that this is that we're lazy filmmakers or we're lazy artists, or that we've denied people income, because everyone who worked on it got paid, you know, reasonably well, and I don't think anyone's got a complaint about the work they did and the you know, their fees. I mean, if we want to talk about that, then you have to look at our careers, because we are the classic struggling indie filmmakers. Tax returns are frankly embarrassing.
So many years of unpaid work working on this, writing a script without any kind of funding, doing a lot of it off our own dime, trying to get the film up. And, you know, we're out of pocket, basically. So
I think it's been sad to see, especially when you did so much practically. I mean, I'm thinking of the worm scene, which I don't want to spoil too much, and that all this was done before the strikes. And it's such an important conversation, I guess, to have when you're talking about using AI, because now it's become, you know, such a cultural lightning rod. And even in my industry as well, as a journalist, it's a conversation that you need to have. But I think the technology is here and it can be useful to a point, ethically, of course.
Yeah.
How do you see AI sort of fitting in with film in the future? Because it's not going anywhere.
I don't think so. But by the same token, we don't see ourselves, just because we dabbled briefly, we're not experts. And I think
and no one is really, are we?
And it's evolving far, and we've just got to learn to deal with it and live with it and use it for good and not evil, I think. And it's there. It's like there's hardly a visual effect in film now that isn't utilizing AI in some form. You know, if you've got fire or particles, that's pre-built stuff that's just getting manipulated, you know, so it's all over the place. And I think it is a concern. Like, I read reviews for our film that I'm sure were written by ChatGPT or whatever.
And
I think we just have to come up with a way of working with it that it's a tool. It's simply a tool, because there's no way, I don't see how AI can ever usurp what we as creatives do, especially in something as complex and involved as filmmaking. I can see it working maybe for some big spectacle, totally VFX driven $200 million movie where you could almost hand it to the robots. But at the independent low budget end of the scale, no way. It's a long bow to draw.
Yeah. Moving on from that, demonic possession is so popular in horror, obviously. It's so fun to watch and create, I imagine. How did you twist that to make it your own?
Yeah, good question. I mean, I think obviously the TV studio setting is quite unique.
Yeah.
In that it's not an environment you kind of immediately think, oh, that's a scary place. Because, you know, we don't have any dark corners or, you know, closets that we've got to jump out of. It's
very well lit.
Exactly.
It's overlit, if that was the
exactly.
You know, I think that's one of its charms, is that we've embraced that harsh light, that hot light. And when we do bring the lights down for that possession scene, it's really effective. You really notice that contrast. So I think they're the sorts of things that we landed upon that just benefited the film and gives it that, yeah, very unique, weird, creepy vibe.
Found footage is obviously a cinematic technique that can provide a lot of freedom in storytelling. It's also got its limitations. So you guys have gone down the road of more a documentary, I guess. Is that Would that be more accurate?
We've never been sure what to call it. That's important. Like, you know, if it is it, yeah, is it mockumentary? Is it found footage? I think it's a bit of all of the above.
Yeah.
You know, the TV show itself is clearly what went to air. It's the master tape. So that's, we can call that found footage, lost media. And then the behind the scenes stuff is more, yeah, that verite. It's a documentary.
Combining those two, what kind of freedom did that give you creatively?
Yeah, well, it meant it was great for the actors. It was the on-screen persona. And then you get to see the backstage selves. And so it imbues everything that happens then. Once you've seen what they're like backstage, you've seen a bit more of their true character. It kind of just gives everything that follows on Night Owls on the show, you know, an added layer of meaning, I guess. Yeah, I'm not sure. Cam, have you got anything to add to that? My brain just...
I saw it switch off.
Yeah, it just went...
It glitched. It actually literally glitched.
Yeah. Yeah. Did I look into the camera? Is that all?
Oh my God, Ingrid was so good at that.
The best note we ever gave her was, don't be afraid to look into the camera.
Yeah.
And
she did it so well.
Yeah. She had a ball. She had, I don't know what she was channeling there, but it was.
Abraxas, obviously.
Abraxas, yeah.
I remember after her big scene with Laura, got to the end of the day, she must have been exhausted, but it didn't show. But I remember David just, his jaw was on the floor and he's going, wow, kid, I'll see you in Hollywood.
Yeah, that's
right. Yeah, amazing.
Remember, she so loved being a part of it. The one day where we had the audience in for all of Jack's monologue and, you know, we had 100 people in, Ingrid rocked up. She wanted to be in the audience.
Really?
She so loved being on set and being a part of the film. She thought she'd hide away. I don't think it wasn't going to work for us. So we let her watch, but not be in the audience. But
right. Yeah. Yeah. To finish up, guys, thanks for your time. At Popcorn Podcast, we're all about celebrating the joy of cinema and that connection that it can bring sitting in that dark theater and watching something that just thrills you. Can you share a moment at the cinema or in a film that's brought you pure joy?
I always remember walking out of A Matter of Life and Death. You know, that Paul Pressburger film? I think it was playing at a repertory theater. And I was like the only one there in the cinema, and I walked out and the world seemed different somehow. When after having that cinematic experience, I was a young man, but I think I saw the world differently for the next hour or two. And that's a certain joy.
I love that. That's perfect. Exactly. Colin, what about you?
I don't know if I can top that. I've had that experience. My memory is also a bit of an issue these days. But yeah, I know the experience well, and it doesn't happen often where you walk out of a movie and you do see the world in a slightly different way, that the film has transported you. You know, I think maybe it was Roger Ebert who said cinema is an empathy machine, that, you know, there are very few. I mean, you can do it with a novel, you can do it through music, but I think nothing has the power in just 90 minutes when done well to take you into another world and see the world with somebody else's eyes and create empathy for someone who you would never meet in your everyday life. I'm struggling to think of, I mean, there's so many. You know, Vertigo is probably the film I've seen the most number of times, eight, nine, 10 times. And it's not a sense of joy at the end, it's a sense of utter despair at the end of that film. But it does, it just opens your eyes to another way of seeing things. And that's the beauty of cinema.
Well put, guys. I couldn't have said it better myself. Thank you again so much for your time and congrats on the film.
Thank you, Lee.
Ladies and gentlemen, please stay tuned for a live television first as we attempt to commune with the devil.
Well, there you have it, straight from the source. These guys love filmmaking. And when you have a real passion for film and a dedicated team behind you that these guys had, it shines through in the work and makes it like so much more enjoyable to watch.
It does. That's right. And Late Night with the Devil is a ride, especially for horror fans. So we urge you to check it out.
And you can check it out when it's in Australian cinemas from April 11.
We hope you enjoyed this special interview episode of Popcorn Podcast with Lee and Tim.
And as always, friends, we'll be right back with you after these messages.
No, seriously, we'll catch you next time.
We are now on YouTube, where you will find our latest celebrity video interviews. Simply search Popcorn Podcast with Lee and Tim and make sure you subscribe so you don't miss a thing.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.